Merħba għal-programm Minajnejn Barranin fejn jiena Khaled Fitz niltaqa u niddiskuti pajjiżna ma' diversi persuni ta' nazzjonalitajiet differenti li għal xi raġuni oħra għamlu lill-Malta id-dar tagħhom. Il-programm jixxandar kulnar ta' tlieta fit-tmienja ta' filgħaxija b'repetizzjoni l-ħamis fl-10 ta' filgħodu, kif ukoll jinstab fuq is-sit elettroniku ta' Campus FM. On Minajnejn Barranin this week, Hans Ancone from the Netherlands. Hans, please tell us a little bit about yourself, how long you've lived in Malta and how long you've lived in the Netherlands, your original home country.
Okay. I was born 49 years ago in a small village in the eastern part of the Netherlands, Geesteren. Nobody will know where it is. When I was 18, I moved to the United States for a year. Over there, I worked as a volunteer in a kindergarten. It was a very interesting year. And the original idea was, after that year, to go back to Holland, which I did, to attend college, and then to come back to the United States again. But there was a little bit of a change in plans, because I went to Malta with a filming company, because we were making a promotion film about Malta. This was together with the Dutch company, the Travelling Agency, the MTA, and Air Malta. And I came here twice, and that's how I ended up here the first time.
And what year was this?
This was in 1990, May 1990.
Could you tell us a little bit about why you remained in Malta?
I went back. I came in May and I came back in June because we did not have nice weather for the filming. Then I did my thing back in Holland. And then the Dutch traveling agency contacted me. And they had a problem because their travel representative had left the island. And they asked me if I could come to Malta for 3 months. And being a bit adventurous, especially at that age, I said, no problem, I will go, but I have to be back in October because I had assignments that I had to attend to. So the deal was for 3 months to Malta.
And how did the 3 months turn into, basically it's 2015 when we're recording this program?
I went there for the 3 months, and to be quite honest, I was not all that happy where I was working. I did not hit it off. But in the meantime, I was contacted by another traveling company, and they asked me, can you start with us? And I was, for me, it was like, Malta is nice. Not that I fell in love with it, but Malta was nice for me for a year. That was the planning. So I went back to Holland to do my assignments for that month that I had to be back. And then I came back and started with a new company. And that was the year that I met my dear husband. And first there was no question I was going back to the United States, because we were friends. Michael and I were buddies, and Michael knew that I wanted to go back to America, but the buddies became a little bit more than just buddies, and we became boyfriend and girlfriend. And Michael told me, he said, like, in case you want to go back to the States, and it's a year, I'm going to wait for you. And for me, it was like, if somebody's going to wait a full year for me, he might be the right one. So that's how I'm still here.
So your husband, Michael, is Maltese. We'll get back to Michael a little bit later. Let's go back to the village you're from. What was it called?
Geesteren.
Could you tell us a little bit about Geesteren? I can't say it. Could you say it again?
Geesteren.
Geesteren.
Very good, because you should be able to say it with the G.
Okay. Geesteren. So could you tell us a little bit about your life there, being brought up in a small village in the Netherlands? Explain a little bit about life in the Netherlands and in a village like that as compared to life in Malta.
I think that life in a village can be compared to life in Malta a bit, because a village community is very much closed as well. And I was brought up very unusual. I went to school, that was very unusual, to a girls' school. And we had nuns. And that was very, very unusual in at that time.
Because but very normal for Malta.
Exactly. And I went to a girls' school. And in the village, you know, there are a lot of activities, you know, music lessons, the flute I played, I did the piano lessons, the ballet, the jazz ballet. A lot of things were organized over there. And it was very protected. Then after going from elementary school to secondary, I had to go to the big city. That was Almelo. It's still small. And I had to go every day on my bicycle, 15 kilometers going and 15 kilometers coming back.
Was this the closest big city to your village?
And over there, a new world opened because it was a mixed school. And it was very interesting for the girls who went to an old Catholic girls' school. And the first year was very interesting. We had a lot of fun, me and my friends, but we all failed the first year. We all had to do a reset. And I did my secondary. That was 6 years. And after those 6 years, I went to the States.
And what sort of jobs have you done?
In the States, I was volunteering because you're not allowed to get any money when you don't have the proper papers. Mm-hmm. Then in Holland, during my studies, I took up modeling, and not because I enjoyed the modeling so much, but it was extra pocket money. But unfortunately, the modeling took over a little bit because once you make the money, you're a little bit more into the money than the studies. So the studies, I studied English and Dutch. Unfortunately, I did not finish it. But after that, I did take up another study in Amsterdam. And that was tourism related, and I graduated from there. And after that, again, the modeling, and that's how I came to Malta, because it was with a television company.
And do you, what kind of career do you have in Malta?
I work in the travel industry. I came here, as I told you before, as a travel rep. I worked my way up as a head travel rep. Then all of a sudden, I was like, enough is enough. I wanted to change. And I started working at the airport with the luggage handling, but it was not really my kind of thing. It was a nice experience. I enjoyed it. But I went back to the kind of travel business, not 100%, because I'm working now in renting out apartments. Mm-hmm. And that can be for tourists. It can be for people who are staying here for a longer time. It can even be for Maltese people. And it's a very interesting job.
So you came to Malta the first time in 1990 on assignment from the travel company. Before that, had you heard of Malta?
The first time I heard of Malta was when I was doing a tourism course, and it was like, you know, you needed to know Europe and what is the capital of Malta. That is all I knew. But when I got asked to come to Malta on that assignment, I had to do my studies a little bit, because when you go with a film crew, you have to know what needs to be filmed and where you want to go to. So that's when I did a little bit of research. But more or less the experience of Malta started when I came here and I went around, because I had no idea about the history, about the temples, about how far back and how rich the history is over here.
So you arrived in Malta, and what was your very first impression when you got off the plane, you know, the first day in this new country?
I arrived at night, and more or less, like, it was all very much exciting. And then the next day, it started already with the filming. And the first impressions that I had was airport, 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 because we were making shots of flights landing and the camera broke down. So we had to go to TV Malta to get replacement cameras, go back to the airport for more flights and more landing of planes.
So did you find good cooperation?
Yes, they were very helpful. They were very helpful.
And then the next few days, how long was your first visit for? A few days?
10 days. 10 days.
And did you manage to get to the beach and at least, you know, explore a bit of Malta?
What we were very attracted to was the diving. And that was because we met people from a diving school, and they were very friendly and generous by taking us around doing boat trips. I had my first experience of diving. That was very interesting. And besides that, you know, we went out with them in the evening. And these were Maltese people, and there was also a Dutch guy involved.
Did you find in the first two times that you came to Malta, because you came to Malta a bit later after this first visit, did you find that Malta was a modern place, or was there a big contrast from Holland? Because we're talking 1990, where certain infrastructure that we take for granted today was not in place in Malta at the time. Did you find Malta a big contrast from the Netherlands, apart from the weather, of course, and things like that? Or was it an easy place for you to get used to?
Very big contrast, because don't forget, Holland is a very, we have a very flat, structured country. Yeah. Holland is, even mentality-wise, very different. It's a very liberal country. And then when you come to Malta, for me, it was interesting, but I thought it was very chaotic. Mm-hmm. And then the other thing is, Malta is very conservative. Mm-hmm. And that is something that sometimes it's difficult for me, because sometimes I say things, I don't mean to say them in a bad way, but certain things are normal for me, but they're not normal here. And sometimes, and that is something typical Dutch as well, the Dutch can be very direct, and they're a little bit more diplomatic here in Malta. So I have to be a bit more careful not to be too direct.
So you're saying now this is still the case. I'm assuming that Malta has developed, even certain attitudes have become more liberal, and we're less conservative than we used to be in 1990 and the early 90s when you first came here. But you still find this to be an issue?
No, I don't see it as a very big issue anymore. There are certain things. I think you have to accept it as well. It has been told to me, like, the country won't change for you. I have to try to adapt to the country. Sometimes it's very difficult, but that's the way it is.
So, the early 90s, and you met Michael, your husband, who, by the way, is also a media personality, Michael Bujeya, music lover, music journalist, etc. We've interviewed him here on Campus FM in the past. And you fell in love, and you made the decision to stay in Malta.
We became good friends. He was my best friend here on the island. The love part came later.
May I ask how you met?
We met at BJ's.
On the BJ's, the nightclub?
BJ's, the nightclub.
Did you both like the same kind of music?
Or? As well, but we enjoyed BJ's as a place, you know, because there was live music. And we met through a friend of ours. And Michael got himself introduced to me. And he heard that I was, you know, Dutch, and he wanted to learn Dutch. That's what he told me. And that's how it started. Every Monday night, Michael came to my place in Sliemen to learn Dutch.
So it was a little bit of a holiday romance for you and possibly for him at the beginning, although it was a friendship, but then it developed into love.
It was a friendship that fell into love, but it was definitely not a holiday romance, because I think the holiday romances that are here in Malta, I see it happening, they won't last, because you have to be prepared and you need to know what you get yourself into when you want to stay here on the island. And I think when you come here in Malta, you fall in love, everything is nice, everything is holiday, everything is romantic, then when normal life starts, I think you're going to have a very hard time. And I've seen it with quite a few people around me, that they come here, they are totally, totally in love, decide to stay here, and a few months later they go back.
And this is a very interesting point you've made, and something I want to explore very much in this series of programs. So yes, Malta can be seen as a little bit of a sort of almost paradise, you know, the sun, the sea, holiday romance perhaps. But when real life starts after those 2 weeks or 1 month of love, and then people decide to maybe settle down, and they settle down here, what are the kind of issues that people need to get over, and a lot of people do, of course, but others don't, as you said. What are the kind of issues that you had to face over the first few years, and people in general when they first come to Malta, in your opinion?
What do you have to face? It's a different life. What I had to face with work is that work never stops. It might as well be in the line of work I'm in. That's, you know, I look for it, I don't know, but for me it's a little bit strange that it's normal that you work every day. And it is normal in because the tourism industry, you know, it keeps on going. Then another issue with me that you have to face living here and working here is I think that people are very much underpaid in Malta. And that is something for me, because I was younger when I came here, but let's say if I had to start now in Malta and start working here, I would be in shock. I would be in shock with the salaries that they pay over here.
But some people argue that then salaries are higher, for example, in the Netherlands, but then prices are also higher. Or is this not the case in your opinion?
No. I think the prices in Holland, when I compare and I go to a supermarket, I definitely don't pay more, maybe even less. The thing what is more expensive in Holland, that is certain taxes that you have to pay, let's say for the garbage, the road taxes, those are a little bit more than that they're here. Mm-hmm.
So when did you decide to settle in Malta? Not the States, not the Netherlands. Was there a possibility of perhaps you and Michael settling in the Netherlands instead? Or was the decision always going to be Malta?
We have discussed it to go to Holland, but we are both very realistic about opportunities in how to adapt to life. In Holland, unfortunately, when you want to go there as a foreigner, it's not as easy as many people think it is, because in Holland it's at that time, and it still is like this, and it has become like that in Malta as well, with degrees, even, you know, when you want to go to Holland, with the language. And Michael had a good job here. I had my work here. For Michael to go to the States, that was not an option because it was not on his wish list. To go to Holland, if I really, really pushed him to go to Holland, I think he would have come with me. But being practical, it made more sense for the two of us to stay here.
And when you broke the news to your family in Holland, what was their reaction?
For my family, in a way, they were upset because I was not in Holland. On the other hand, they were very, very relieved because I was not in the United States. So it was easier. It was not that far away. And then as well, they saw I was happy with Michael, and that for them is the most important.
And what was their impression of Malta, perhaps after the, when they did visit Malta? It was, again, like it was to you, probably a bit of a strange-sounding country, which they had never heard of before.
They thought it was a very interesting country. They've done their sightseeing because we took them around. Unfortunately, they haven't been the last few years, and that is because of health reasons. But they see that I have my life here. They've been to where we live, but now we have reached the point that we go to Holland more often.
Now, what is your most favorite thing about Malta, the thing you love most about this little island that you have made your home?
My husband. No, what I love as well is I love summertime. I love the sun. I love the sea. And I love the beautiful view from my kitchen, because I see the sea and I see St. Julian's, I see the valley.
And then the opposite question, what is the thing you dislike most? The thing you wish could be changed?
Traffic and parking, my biggest frustration.
Traffic and parking. Do you have any suggestions? Is there some way perhaps they do things differently in the Netherlands that we could adopt here in Malta to make things better?
I think if the public transport is a little bit more organized and people use it more, then there won't be that many cars on the road. And another thing I think is that young children already starts with cars when they're 18. I think that is totally ridiculous. When you go to university, I think it's strange that you have the money to buy a car of 30,000 euro. And that for me is...
But some of them have a 30,000 euro car, but others I think it's probably maybe 12,000 or 13,000, but that's still a lot of money.
Yeah, I know. No, for me, no cars.
And of course, some students buy a second-hand car, which is even cheaper than that. But that's your point, that perhaps...
There are too many cars on the road.
And perhaps the younger people could have systems of public transport for university and higher education that could be applied especially for them. Now, do you have a social circle of Dutch people here in Malta that you know and that you have formed a group of friends with and that you, you know, reminisce about home but also help each other out with living in Malta?
It's not like, you know, the Dutch people go to a certain place. It exists, but it's not something that I'm looking for, and it's not something the friends I hang around with are looking for, because then you end up meeting people that in your normal daily life you would not even look at twice. I went to a few of the evenings in the beginning I was in Malta, and I ended up talking to people that I was like, what am I talking to you for? So the friends that I have been in Malta for quite some time as well. Most of them, well, my best friend is married to a Maltese man as well. There are other people living here not being married and who have been here for a long time. And unfortunately, once you get older and once everybody has their own life, the social circle is not so intense as how it was when we were younger.
Are there a lot of Dutch people in Malta that you know of?
Yes, there are quite a few Dutch people here. Not only young people, there are also older people here who come to retire in Malta.
Oh, is that a big industry? We know there's a lot of British people who come to retire in Malta and maybe some Germans. That's quite a large number. But are there a lot of Dutch people as well who retire here?
Yeah, there are quite a few. Yeah.
Is Malta advertised in Holland as a place, a suitable place for that kind of thing?
No, it's most of the time that they hear it from other people.
What about Maltese friends? Have you built up a good group of Maltese friends in the 20, 25 years that you've been here?
I should say I should have more friends from Malta. The friends that I meet are people from work, people that I meet at the gym. But it's not a kind of friendship that, let's say, we meet each other every week for a coffee.
What about the Maltese language? Have you felt the need to learn any of it? And do you speak any Maltese, or have you got by without it just fine?
Well, I will be honest. I'm ashamed to say so that I don't speak Maltese. Ftit hafna. When I first came here, that was the first year in Malta, I went with my best friend to school to learn Maltese for foreigners. But unfortunately, the whole course was very based on grammar. And I was not interested in the grammar. I wanted to speak and I wanted to understand. And 5 months into the process, I gave up.
So you think it would have been better if there was more conversation in both?
But I do blame myself that I don't know as much as I should. I should have, and I still hope that one day, maybe.
Do you ever come across anything in Malta that makes you frustrated and say, oh, this wouldn't happen in Holland?
All the time. But then I'm being honest as well. It's an excuse to be angry as well. Because always your own country, where you're not at, is always better. And I realize very much, like, when I go to Holland, everything is nice because I'm on holiday. And I have the tendency when I'm in Malta, this is not good, this is not good. But I have to be honest, it's not all bad.
And on the other hand, are there some things in Malta that you think Malta has managed to do better than in Holland?
No.
Totally honest. You have a background in the tourism industry, and also you've been living here. So I'm asking you this question as somebody who enjoys perhaps nightlife or going out or is looking for things to do outside of work, and also as a tourist, as a person involved in the tourist industry who would have been looking for things to promote to tourists to do in Malta. So do you think Malta offers a good nightlife, a good amount of leisure facilities, or should we look into organizing more things?
I think that Malta has quite a lot to offer regarding the nightlife, because I'm older, I'm out of the stage of Patrifield. For me, that is one complete nightmare to go to, but I know that the youngsters like to go there, and I hope they have a wonderful time. But then on the other hand, there are a lot of things that are being organized, like music festivals. We have the Notte Bianca coming up. We have a tattoo exhibition coming up. There is the theater, there is dance, there is, sometimes we have big artists coming. So I do think that there is quite a lot, you know, that is being offered.
So Malta is on the right track culturally?
Yes, I do think so.
Do you have any regrets at all about having dedicated your life to Malta for the last 25 years? Would you have done something differently looking back?
If I had not stayed here, I would not have my husband. So that for me is a very important reason, and that's why I'm here.
Ans Ankone from the Netherlands, thank you very much for being on Minainen Baranin. I'll be interviewing another guest, this time from Poland, next. Għedin tisamaw il-program Minajnejn Barranin fuq Campus FM li jixxandar kull nhar ta' tlieta fit-tminja ta' filgħaxija b'repetizzjoni l-ħamis fl-10 ta' filgħodu, kif ukoll jitstab fuq is-sit elettroniku ta' Campus FM. This program is called Minajnejn Barranin. Malta through foreign eyes. If you feel you can contribute to this program by being interviewed and offering your own insights, please write to us here at campusfm@um.edu.mt. That's email campusfm@um.edu.mt. I'm speaking to Monika Masłowska from Poland. So another interesting exploration here of a foreign person who has made Malta their home. And Monika has been in Malta for 20 years. So let's start with the first question, Monika. Tell us a little bit about yourself in Malta at the moment, what you do, your career, that sort of thing.
At the moment, my dreams have come true, and I finally lecture at the University of Malta in screenwriting and cinema. I love teaching, I love students, and I also freelance as a screenwriter. So I have a number of projects going on, and I'm doing my PhD at Bangor University in Wales.
You say you're a screenwriter as well. Could you tell us a little bit about what you've written, and is there anything out there that perhaps some people would be aware of?
Absolutely. There is Maltese Fighter, the short, that has made it to BAFTA. And also it will represent Malta in Beijing. In fact, it already did in China, in Beijing. So that is, you know, very gratifying to see that, because Maltese Fighter is a short that it was screened along with Ida of Paweł Pawlikowski, yeah, the Polish film that got an Oscar in 2015. So yeah, things, you know, began to kind of get rolling.
Absolutely. And just a little bit about yourself. So have you always been artistic and into this kind of thing? You said your dreams recently came true. So did it take a long time? We'll take a bit of a tangent away from the subject of the program just to discover a little bit more about you.
Absolutely. It took a lifetime because my upbringing was somewhat military. So I was studying, I was doing my BA in Poland, and I was studying to become an interpreter and a translator, wanting to, you know, working for UNESCO. I always wanted to translate a book because as a writer, you have to have something, a story to tell. I never thought I did, yeah. So actually quite late when I was in my 30s, I actually realized that someone pushed me into screenwriting, and I kind of never looked back since then.
And you find it easy to write in English? Is it in English?
Absolutely in English. I can't write in Polish anymore because it takes so much energy to, you know, think visually and to use beautiful language. No, I can't do that in Polish.
So let's go back to Poland as a child. Where were you brought up in Poland? And tell us a little bit about your life there.
I come from Gdańsk, which is Danzica, yeah.
What used to be known as Danzig, but is known as Gdańsk now.
That's right, Gdańsk.
Very historic city, lots of battles.
Yeah, it's at least 1,000 years old, but it's known for Solidarność.
Oh, as well as the famous Polish Union of the 70s and 80s.
Yeah, absolutely. My dad is a professor of psychiatry and a neurologist, so we even, you know, my dad was very ambitious. I mean, he still is because he's alive. So we would change houses, you know, every 2 or 3 years. I would change schools. And, of course, it did not end up, you know, in Poland only. Eventually we moved to Libya, then Canada, then Malta, and then we left Malta, then we came back, but finally I made Malta my home.
Tell us a little bit about your life in Gdansk. It was a port city, so lots of shipyards and that kind of thing, similar to Malta. We depended on the port for many people's lifeline for many years. What was your childhood like? And, you know, the differences between Poland and Malta, I assume, for example, the weather.
Yeah, no, I mean, absolutely, we have four seasons, and, you know, I have good memories. You know, sea and the beaches are very, very, you know, really long. We have like nearly 400 kilometers of beaches.
Sandy beaches?
Yeah, sandy beaches, very white sand. In fact, you know, many foreigners are surprised because it's almost like the Caribbeans, yeah? It's just that the water is ugly. It's gray. Yeah, the Baltic Sea as such is an ugly sea.
And cold.
Yes, and cold, yes.
Did you spend time swimming in summertime?
Yes, I did.
Building sandcastles and all the things that Maltese kids would have been brought up with.
Absolutely, yes. But also we have lakes. We would go, you know, to a, you know, lake shore as well. I mean, we have forests. There's so much in Poland, you know, and especially where I come from, Gdańsk, because it's very hilly. You see, I mean, we have to go back to thousands of years ago when there were glaciers. So when they came, they pushed, you know, the ground. And when they retrieved, we ended up having lots of lakes, rivers, and, you know, quite high hills. Not mountains, but hills.
And have you been back to Gdansk over the years, perhaps recently? And how has it changed since your childhood?
It has changed incredibly because obviously once the gates of capitalism opened, everything flooded in, and now it's become very commercial, and because of your European Union, unfortunately, we don't have our identity anymore. This is my impression, my perception of things. What was the other question? Oh, yes, I know the other question. How often I travel there?
Yes.
Basically 3 or 4 times a year, because finally 3 years ago, Wizz Air was introduced. And I never, ever believed that living in Malta, I would catch a direct flight Malta-Gdańsk. I mean, that was insane, you know. I had to pinch myself, yeah. So within, you know, 3 hours, and quarter of an hour I'm with my mum. Yeah, so that was really great.
And what is Gdansk like now?
It's very beautiful, you know. Obviously, architecture has changed. It's no longer grey and browns, you know, the communist architecture. It's actually a really, really beautiful city.
And you mentioned the airline, and do a lot of Maltese people visit Poland? Is there?
I don't see any on Wizz Air. It's full of Polish tourists because maybe it's Gdańsk, not so much explored. I think Maltese travel more to the south, to Kraków, and maybe Warsaw.
So, that's Poland. And you mentioned other countries that you lived in, including Malta. You mentioned Libya, for example. Could you tell us a little bit about your life in all these other countries and why you lived there?
We lived there because my dad got the job there as a doctor. We lived in Libya for 4 years in Benghazi. The first two years were fantastic, really awesome. Then the Gaddafi regime set in, and that's where things started to go sour, really, really bad. So after 2 years, we had to leave. In fact, then we came to Malta. And I remember, this is such a funny thing, among the Polish community, Malta was famous for serving boiled cucumbers. But of course, that wasn't boiled cucumbers, that was boiled marrows. Yeah, I only realized that once I came to Malta.
And what is the significance of boiled cucumbers? Are they popular in Poland?
No, they're horrible. We don't boil cucumbers. That's why it was so weird. I said, "Oh, they are just really wackos there in Malta."
Oh, so there was this impression that Malta served boiled cucumbers.
Exactly. Not knowing that, you know, it was our mistake, because our lack of knowledge, our ignorance, because they were just boiled, you know, marrows.
This is exactly why I'm producing this program, because we know that, for example, some members of the British colonial administration used to say that the Maltese are always grumbling, so Maltese gem. And now we have this perspective of some Polish people or a Polish community having the impression that in Malta we serve boiled cucumbers and thinking that we were very silly to do this.
As a delicacy, national delicacy.
Do you know where it came from?
Yes, we had some students here at De La Salle.
Boarding school.
Yeah, exactly, boarding school, that's right. So students, you know, coming back to Libya to join the families, they would come back with such a story that the hosting families or, you know, at the canteen at De La Salle, they serve boiled cucumbers.
But boiled marrows is okay.
Oh, yes, boiled marrows is okay.
Tell us a little bit about Polish food, actually, while we're on the subject of food.
It's quite heavy. So we have boiled cabbage, of course, pierogi. We have pork chops, which we call schab.
Oh, like clouds and Maltese?
Exactly, but it's schab schnitzel, that's how we call it. Of course, we have barszcz, the beetroot soup. Lots of cakes, like poppy seed cakes. And in fact, you know, 20 years ago, where I would, obviously, there was the frontier, the customs would stop me because I had poppy seeds, yeah, which are harmless. But, you know, I would be stopped many times, you know, like, what's that, you know, thinking it's opium, but it's not, you know, it was harmless. Eventually, they would let me go. And at least we could have our Christmas cake.
Poland, so Libya, you said living in Libya was good for 2 years, but then not so good for the 2 years afterwards. This is in the 70s or 80s?
Early 80s.
And could you give us just a taste of what it was like to live there? Were you restricted in any way, or was life similar to, for example, life in Malta in any way?
No, in here. Even though the first 2 years were really great, but we still had to be very careful. You know, my mom, my sister, myself, you know, blonde, and we had to be very careful. My father was like a hawk, you know. Mm-hmm. There were some ugly, you know, situations where my sister got kidnapped, for instance, but she was a fighting spirit, so she managed to run away. We had this guy breaking into our house, you know, this little incident, although we lived in a kind of a compound for foreign doctors, mm-hmm. but you have to be very careful. And then things started to get really ugly.
In what way, if you don't mind my asking?
When the Gaddafi came into power, actually he was already in power, but I mean, I was a child, so I can't remember, but I think he started recruiting, you know, an ordinary, you know, especially young men into the army. He started taking away villas and wealth from rich people. And there was also a lot of tension because the Libyans, ordinary good people, would blame us, foreigners. So it was getting heavy, so we had to leave.
I think then historically there was still tension between the Tripoli and Benghazi, where you were, eventually leading to the whole revolution, which I believe started in the Benghazi area. Did you live in any other countries?
Yes, in Canada, in Toronto.
And what was that like?
I hated it.
You didn't like it. So what was wrong with living in Toronto? And how long did you live there for?
Just 3 months. And we ran away again. Actually, I made my parents to go back to Poland. I like Europe.
So you came to Malta and, okay, was it, did you want to come to Malta? Did you?
No, that was a very conscious choice because when I came back to Malta as an adult, I always loved Malta and Maltese people. It's a very special place.
So when did you first come here?
Originally,
yes.
As a child in, '85, '86, I think.
And you were a child, so was it a summer holiday of some sort?
No, my father got a job here as a doctor.
I see. So
that's the time of the 80s, where the Maltese, unfortunately, doctors were made to leave their professions. Mm-hmm. Yeah, there was this political issue, and foreign doctors were called in to fill in.
So you came here, and as a child, did you go to school here? What were your first impressions of Malta?
I can't remember. Let me think. I know it was, we lived in Slima at the time. Obviously, Slima was different, 20, 30 years ago. It was a very beautiful city. I remember lots of colors, lots of sun, really nice people. Guys whistling, which was like, okay.
But not being kidnapped.
No, that's for sure.
And then you left again and came back later on when you were an adult. And your impressions of Malta must have been a bit different then because you had responsibilities. Tell us a little bit about that time.
I was still single at the time. I felt as if I was coming back home.
Did you make friends with different families, or was it a Polish community? How did it work?
Actually, none of them were Polish. They were all Maltese. So, from school, because I went to De La Salle for a short while, obviously I had boyfriends, or maybe I should say one boyfriend, but no, it was boyfriends. And, I like people and, I made so many friends, really close friends. With some of them I'm kind of still remain in touch.
Is there a Polish community or a group of Polish people here in Malta that you are familiar with and that you are friends with?
There is a Polish community. They've just opened a Polish deli down the road in Mostar. I don't really keep so much in touch with them because I don't really have so much time. Between my PhD teaching and writing, I just don't have the time.
I suppose when you first came to Malta, there were very few Polish people here.
Yes, but we were kind of a proper community because, they were all either doctors or engineers. So we kind of kept together. Mm-hmm. Nowadays, since EU, such free, unencumbered traveling, people just come from Poland and, make a living here, live here, settle down here. So the community is growing constantly. So I don't know how many thousands of Polish nationals, live in Malta permanently.
So you came to Malta and you started working?
No, I was studying. I was studying, getting my A-levels. So actually, coming to think of it, I came to Malta twice. Three times I came back. So the third time as an adult, and that's where I kind of met my husband.
Ah, yes. So you fell in love with a Maltese man?
Oh, yes. I asked him to marry me, believe it or not, and he said yes, thank God. And we were married, for quite a while.
Did you think that maybe you could build a family in Poland, or was it always going to be here in Malta?
I never saw myself as, settling back home in Poland. It was always Malta or somewhere else, but not Poland. I lost my kind of affinity you know, with talent, because probably I left when I was 12. It was very difficult for me to find myself back in that reality.
So you've been in Malta 20 years, and it's time for the question I ask all my guests. If somebody asks you, where are you from, what do you say? How do you feel?
That is a very good question. For the past year, I'm saying that I'm Maltese, that I'm from Malta.
But before that, it was you're Polish.
Yes. It's very difficult, you know, I have a dual nationality, and sometimes it was so difficult to choose. But I don't know, something happened this year. This year, I'm proud to say that I come from Malta.
What have been some of the bad things that have that you've seen in Malta over the years that have upset you, or that you feel Malta would be a better place if they didn't happen or if they didn't exist?
I don't think there are any. You know, nothing serious, really. No, I don't think I can kind of say anything to this, because Poland can be just as, you know, difficult. So I feel I cannot do this.
Okay, then. So what are the best things about Malta, the most wonderful things about living here?
I think people are very genuine. They are very authentic. I love all the different accents.
You mean the different Maltese accents?
Yeah, yeah, because I live in Russia, even that kind of heavier accent, I just love that. It's a, you know, safe place to live. People are very helpful. You know, something that I think we are losing, you know, from other countries, we lose this community-like feeling. We don't have that anymore, like in Poland, we don't have it.
You mean it's gone completely, or are we losing it slowly?
In Poland.
In Malta?
No, in Malta you still have it.
But do you think we're in danger of losing it?
No, I don't think so.
No. Oh, that's very positive, that's very optimistic. And you think this is a positive thing that we should hang on to?
Yes, absolutely.
You've been accepted into the community in your village with Maltese. As you say, you feel Maltese. Do you speak the language as well, the Maltese language?
Oh, yes, but please don't ask me to say anything.
Did you study it specifically doing a course, or did you just pick it up over the years?
First of all, I picked the language over the years. And then, yes, I did attempt to take private lessons. But I felt miserably because he asked me, because it was a male teacher, to memorize, you know, all the different conjunctions. I can't even remember. And I felt, you know, okay, that's not for me. It's best, you know, by ear, learn by communicating with people.
And now you can hold a conversation completely in Maltese?
No.
How much can you speak?
I can, you know, I can hold a conversation, yeah. But issue is, you see, I learned English and Italian at the age of 12. Now, Maltese I learned when I was, you know, well over 20. And it's so difficult, that mental shift is really difficult. I mean, so what I can say is that I definitely understand, you know, like most of the Maltese language, but when I try to speak it, I do get a bit embarrassed, you know, because the funny thing is, when I speak it, my Polish accent comes through. And sometimes, you know, when I turn around, walk away, I hear them laughing. I mean, in a sweet way, you know, but I still get offended.
As they say in Maltese, "Je gustauk."
Yes, exactly.
So, technically, you don't really need to use Maltese very much. You get by very well with English.
Yes, but, you know, one thing actually what really astonished me, how many people, especially young Maltese, do not speak English. They just cannot speak the language. And I can understand why, once you have Maltese, of course, use it. But my goodness, it's such a shame, yeah? They are unable to speak English. That's shocking, yes.
And you think this is a problem?
This is a problem in a sense that, of course, I mean, I need to qualify my answer. It's a problem because why catch yourself away from another language? It's another way to communicate with others.
You're a lecturer at the university now, as you said. So what's your opinion on the education system here? And, for example, you have a daughter. I believe. And were you happy with the level of education she received and your own personal experiences now at university, the students you lecture to? Do you feel that the level of education in various subjects is high?
It is high, but of course it always depends on the lecturer. It's not so much on his knowledge or her knowledge, but their ability to, you know, pass their knowledge, to share their knowledge. And sometimes that's a problem. They don't know how to motivate students.
But when students are motivated, do you think they can reach high levels?
In Malta, Maltese students, absolutely. They're ever so clever. Yes, I love my students.
Monica, tell us a little bit more about your PhD studies. I believe it's something quite interesting and related to Malta and possibly something no one's ever done before.
Yes, so my PhD, its title, it's a companion to script writing practices in Malta, from Rediffusion radio plays to digital game narratives. Basically, what I'm doing is I provide a comprehensive study of the historical development of Malta's scripting practices, meaning, Rediffusion radio plays, writing for television, then writing the shorts, the documentary, and nowadays, you know, thank God, it's finally writing for feature films. And also because Malta is very strong in writing for narrative, digital game narratives. Mm-hmm. So I end my research, you know, on this, you know, beautiful note. But also what I do is I'm trying to analyze the complexity of the Maltese character identity emerging in these audiovisual productions in Malta. And I want to see if there is, you know, self-perception and self-reflection of the Maltese in these audiovisual works.
What attracted you to want to study this kind of thing?
First of all, because I'm a screenwriter myself and a researcher, and also I look for in my studies for what makes us human. And I think Maltese, they have a very interesting history, kind of islanders in the south, on the peripherality and post-colonial. So I want to see what comes out through my research.
And will you be comparing it with other countries, narrative script writing histories?
It's still kind of early days. Right now I'm focusing on gathering all the materials and obviously reading it and putting my thoughts on paper, because I'm only just halfway through my PhD. I probably will. It'll be very interesting. Maybe the Basque, which is very unusual, the Basque National Cinema, if there is national cinema. But it's very interesting what's emerging, because, of course, they have the Basque mm-hmm. language as well. So I might go into that, you know, that direction.
And it's Mediterranean as well. I think you have a very interesting job ahead of you, or you've already started, in the sense that I am a bit of an observer of cultural media myself. And I hear that in the Rediffusion days, the British company Rediffusion that started off radio broadcasting in Malta, it was a golden era with lots and lots of radio plays and varied subjects and some great voices. And television as well, 70s especially, lots of drama and comedy and stuff on TV. And then it kind of died down a little bit in the 80s and 90s, and then it came back with a bang. And nowadays, the schedules on television are full of Maltese dramas, more like soap operas than dramas, and some people criticize them for being a little bit too similar and a little bit too depressing. But as you said, and then leading up to the whole gaming narrative, which, as you said, is very, very strong, another aspect to the Maltese character. And you're exploring all these phases.
Exactly. It's a lot of work to do, but obviously it's a PhD, I don't mind at all. And it's a unique study, obviously it's never been done before. So should anyone inquire what's the history of Malta's script writing practices, they'll pick up my PhD.
And before we conclude on this point, how hard is it to track down the script and maybe even the actual footage from some of the old television plays from the 70s or 60s even, and even the radio plays going back to the time of World War II?
Archives, private archives, public archives, you know, here and say, people will guide me, you know.
So people will help you, people tell you, I mean, there isn't a public directory for these archives if they're private.
Oh, no. It's asking a question and people coming back, well-meaning people. Of course, I need to rely on the goodwill of people. And of course, Maltese have been known for their generosity and they've never let me down. So I do get a lot of feedback and information.
So shall we make an appeal right now? Maybe anybody listening who has some information or old scripts and that are related to broadcasting or film to get in touch with you?
It's audiovisual productions, mm-hmm. just to be. But yeah, wow. Thank you.
Audiovisual. So
it's everything. Not so much the radio. I'm focusing, or rather, beginning from Rediffusion radio plays, because those writers who were writing radio plays moved for television. Move to television, so that's why. But absolutely. Anyone, you know, it'd be great if they could contact me with feedback and information.
And anybody who would like to do this can send an email to the Campus FM email address, which I will be giving out later in the program, and let us know what information you have, so I can forward it to Monica myself. Let's go back to The Maltese Fighter, the short film you mentioned that has been shown around the world that you wrote. So could you tell us a little bit about that? Give us a peek into the plot. And
okay, that shot was in a way also co-written with the film director, Arif Manoukian. I know the story is, you know, relationship between father and son. It's in the 70s. It's a single father, and he's just trying to, you know, bring up his son. He's a boxer, but as I know, amateur, dilettante, yeah. And then he loses his job and has to provide, you know, for his son. So he goes with the kind of gangsters to make a living. But it ends well 20 years later.
And could you mention some of the people who take part in it and who you worked with behind the scenes?
Okay, so we had this really fantastic young director of photography, Matthew Taylor, a Maltese national, very talented. Then we have Arif, the filmmaker from Canada. Malcolm Alul, yeah, he was our main lead. And we had this lovely boy who was playing Malcolm's son, who was actually a real boxer, so we had to coach him into acting. He was a brilliant boy. Nico, I can't remember his last name, though. Oh, I should. It was international crew.
And you say it's doing well in these international film festivals.
Indeed, it's doing quite well.
Now, back to Malta. Do you see yourself living the rest of your life here, or will you be moving on someday?
I don't know. I really don't know.
But would Malta be an option, and would Malta play a part in your future plans?
Possibly, yeah, 99%. But that 1% still is, you know, I'm holding on to the 1% that I don't know.
It depends how your film career goes.
For instance, yes. But I do see myself more in the, you know, in the academia. I prefer teaching than, you know, writing, because writing is such a long endeavor. It's constant rewrite, which is not a bad thing. But, you know, film industry is quite difficult, yeah. It's not so much how good the product is, but sometimes it's whom you know. It's about networking, so it can be disheartening.
Monica Masłowska, thank you very much for being on Minajnejn Baranin on Campus FM. U dik kienet edizzjoni oħra tal-programm Minajnejn Barranin, fejn jiena kol il-fitz niltaqgħu niddiskuti t-tajjeb u dak li hu inqas tajjeb f'pajjiżna, ma' diversi persuni ta' nazzjonalitajiet differenti li għal xi raġuni jew oħra għamlu lil Malta id-dar tagħhom. Il-programm jixxandar kull nhar ta' tlieta fit-tmieneta filgħaxija b'repetizzjoni l-ħamis fl-10 ta' filgħodu, kif ukoll tistgħu issibuh fuq is-sit elettroniku ta' Campus FM.